a full house here this evening. We did not have a closed session, so we're going to move right into O Canada. Thank you over there. If you can remain standing for a moment of silent meditation. Thank you. So tonight we're going to have our annual dedication as a land acknowledgement. We have Mireille Lapointe with us, and we're just waiting for Elder Larry McDermott. He got tied up. Yeah, I think he's in town. He got tied up with traffic. So we're going to move just forward into the agenda while we wait for Elder Larry to arrive and to get settled. So I'm going to jump in the agenda then to attendance, Madam Clerk.
We have all in attendance, Your Worship.
Thank you. And I'm looking for approval of the agenda. Mover and seconder for the agenda. Councillor Holmes and Councillor Dalgety, all those in favor? Thank you. Disclosure of pecuniary interest and general nature thereof. So if there is something in the agenda, you can bring that point up at this time or when it arrives in the agenda. And we have the approval of the minutes. This is found on pages 3 to 7. There's two sets of minutes there. Councillor Ferguson, Deputy Mayor Minnelli, all those in favor? Thank you. Should we go forward into committee the whole stuff or bylaws? Do you want to go forward into this and bylaws and stuff? So if council will indulge me, we're going to jump to item L. This is the Committee of the Whole report found on pages 31 and 32. Recommendation, of course, being that the January 14th Committee of the Whole report be adopted as presented. Mover and seconder, Councillor Holmes, Councillor Maiden, any discussion? All those in favor? Thank you. And bylaws, we just have the one bylaw. There is two. Oh, I'm not on the wrong one. Okay. So I'm on an old agenda. There's two bylaws. If you look at the screen, that is the accurate list of bylaws. So the part lot control for the Henderson H plan and seasonal road closures, which was circulated. Would anyone like to pull either of these for separate discussion or vote? Seeing not, mover and seconder for the bylaws. Councillor Ferguson, Councillor Dalgety, all those in favor? Thank you. Just trucking along here. So I think we've done everything in our agenda without getting into presentations and deputations. We're going to take about 5 minute recess just to give Elder Larry a moment. Yeah, I think he's just on the way in. So, oh, is he right there?
Yep.
Perfect. Excellent timing. There we go. Welcome. Absolutely. Traffic can be challenging. Oh.
It was fine once I got off the Queensway.
On it to Messi.
I looked at my maps and I thought, I'm supposed to be reading from home. Even that doesn't make sense.
Can we get you a glass of water or anything? Or?
That would be nice.
Yeah. So I think Don's going to grab that. No, that's all right. We're all friends.
The Alamo IRT doesn't work always either.
So while Don's getting the water, I'll just do a little bit of introductions. So I'll just provide some introductions and give you a moment to ground yourself.
I'll just organize myself. Can I do that while you're doing?
Absolutely. 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 Or would you rather we call a recess, Larry? Just take a minute.
Well, I don't want to hold things up. I can do it either way, whatever.
Sure. Well, we're going to take a couple minutes, yeah. So discuss amongst yourselves, folks. We're going to take a couple minutes.
yet.
Not yet?
No, she's going to do some things first.
Oh.
And one thing I will say,
yeah,
when you guys are speaking, if you can speak into here, that way we get it recorded.
Yeah.
So when you do your address, we can either have someone kind of come in.
So do we?
I would just stand right here.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So
we'll
just have you pull it close enough.
And do we introduce ourselves?
I was going to, but if you'd like
okay,
to.
Okay, no,
well.
No.
No, no, that's fine. You do it. Do what you've got planned.
Yeah, we'll, do what you want to do.
Okay, and I have one question. I have a plenty of volunteer with me. She wants to be able to take a few pictures. No problem?
Okay. No problem. She wants to move around. So she can do that. You
don't normally want people back there, but yeah, that's fine. Thank you. Whatever she'd like to be.
Okay. Yeah,
right here. So you're okay to go with pictures.
Oh, I know.
You can even walk around. You can see my phone. You got the keys in the car.
Back to the car. I'll be
so excited. Yeah, that's all.
Okay, we get going?
Yep.
Okay. So we'll get started if you're feeling.
Yep. Ready to go.
Ready. All right.
Okay.
I give you mine.
All right, folks. Well, we're going to get started again, and there's a few faces in the gallery that we don't get to see every week, so hopefully you met some new people and met some neighbors and stuff while we had our little break, too. I'd like to introduce our guests before we get started. And excuse me. So Elder Larry McDermott is an Algonquin elder from Shibata. I was ready for it before. Now this break.
Yesterday.
I'm going to try it again. Shibata Bajawan First Nation.
Very good.
Okay. He's also the executive director of Plenty Canada, which is an Indigenous cultural and environmental nonprofit. Elder McDermott is a member of numerous organizations, including UNESCO. He was a three-term mayor and longtime council member of Lanark Highlands, warden of Lanark County, a commissioner of the Ontario Human Rights Commission, and has received an honorary doctorate of laws from the University of Guelph. So welcome.
Which?
I'm also very honored to introduce Grandmother Mireille Lapointe. She's a family head and former chief of the Arduk Algonquin First Nation. She's also a teacher at St. John's in Perth, and has developed an Indigenous education curriculum for the Catholic District School Board of Eastern Ontario. Welcome, and thank you for being with us.
You're welcome.
And just in behind our two guests, we have Sue Evans and Bev Hunter from Mississippi Mills Alumni Relations. And this is a group, they're a local group, whose mission is to respond to the calls to action outlined by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in a respectful, concrete and doable way, and I want to give my thanks for them for their help in this process as well. So just to provide a little bit of context, although acknowledgements have been made in the past, this council wished to recognize the importance of this land acknowledgement by including it in our procedural bylaw. So it means that this statement will be made every year by council. Our community has a long history of settler and Indigenous relations, and we see today as marking not a beginning, but a renewal of those relationships that may have been forgotten. As settlers came to this area, we lived in mutual cooperation, and the support, guidance, and often aid from Indigenous peoples helped many settlers through their first years in a harsh new land. In my own family, I've heard countless stories of how my grandmother Sweeney and her parents enjoyed a close relationship with Joe Bay and his family. In fact, my grandparents met at dances hosted by Joe Bay at the Floating Bridge. Joe's granddaughter was the maid of honor at their wedding. And when Joe passed, my grandmother was gifted his little black driving horse. She remembered him as a terrific trapper and fisherman and a fantastic fiddle player. Our families were good friends and good neighbors. In preparation of today, and in recognition of Indigenous protocol, the traditional offering of tobacco has been made to Elder McDermott at an earlier meeting. We'll now move into a sacred ceremony, and I ask for silence, and if you are able, to please stand.
If I may, let's see if I can bend over without falling over. This is a ceremony that was the kind of ceremony that occurred as a follow-through to the proclamation of 1763 by King George III. It's actually part of the Canada Constitution Act of 1982, and at that time, King George issued his proclamation, drew a line that went right through the middle of Lanier County and said, south is settler territory, north is indigenous or Indian lands in those days, and set up a treaty process that is considered the Magna Carta of the relationship between European people and indigenous peoples. And so there was representation. There was Algonquin representation. In fact, there was between 2,500 and 3,000 indigenous people that participated with Sir William Johnson at that process. It lasted a month. And each day they opened in ceremony. Sometimes with a pipe ceremony, but often with the smudge. And recently, Canada, in establishing its priorities under the Conventions on Climate Change and Biodiversity, called Pathways 1, adopted a co-governance system that said the smudge and the gavel are one and the same, that Robert's Rules of Order and the seven grandmother-grandfather laws are equivalent. So ways of governance, that's something I've been involved with then and since. So I'm gonna light this smudge. The original plan was Mireille would be on my left, but you know what, you can stay there.
I can scoot over.
Yeah?
Sure.
And then you'll just, there's no wrong way to smudge, and you don't have to. We're just offering it. It's given our collective history on this land and how this country came to be. This is how we started every meeting with Pathways 1, and include the National Advisory Panel. I did a lot of work with them, and forestry, mining, agriculture were represented along with environmental NGOs and Indigenous peoples. And in the debriefing at the end, the one common denominator that everybody said worked was the ceremony, was the smudging ceremony, and I got to do that on a regular basis, because they met most of the time in Ottawa. But without further ado, I'll just, I'll move over here. I was always a lousy square dance partner.
It's okay, I'm not.
In fact, Mireille and I had the honor and the privilege of doing ceremony at the Perth and District ceremonies. So we shared a smudging and actually a pipe ceremony there.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm going to get you. So some of what the ceremony is about, and actually science has proven that it's cleansing, we also say that it takes away any negativity we may have encountered and prepares us for a meeting. It helps us bring our spirit, our heart, and our mind together. So that's the thinking behind this tradition. So I'm going to just for you, as much as just
Just hands and draw the smoke dart. Yeah, that's all you got to do. Very good. Okay. These are medicines I should have explained. I'll just stop for a second. So it's sage, cedar, tobacco, and sweetgrass. And these are all from this area. Yeah, this part are good.
Okay, just what do we got, Krista? 5 minutes or 5 minutes or something or less?
I was going to do the statement and then.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll sit down.
Yeah, good memory, but short.
Okay, that's all right. Will that catch me from here? Okay. So we acknowledge that the sacred land on which Mississippi Mills is now located has been a site of human activity for over 10,000 years and is rich in indigenous history. This land is the ancestral and unceded territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe Nation. We are grateful to the Algonquin ancestors who cared for the land and water in order that we might meet here today. Before settlers arrived, this territory was subject to the Dish with One Spoon Wampum Belt Covenant, an agreement between Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee nations to peaceably share and care for resources. After settlers arrived, it became subject to the three-figure wampum belt, last carried by Algonquin elder William Commanda, which commemorates the sharing of this land with English, French, and indigenous nations under the governance of natural law. We recognize with gratitude the knowledge and contributions that the Algonquin peoples bring to the municipality of Mississippi Mills. Today, Mississippi Mills is also home to other indigenous peoples from across Turtle Island. We extend our respect to all First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people for their valuable past and present contributions. We are mindful of broken covenants and the need to reconcile with all our relations. Together, may we care for this land and each other, drawing on the strength of our mutual history of nation building through peace and friendship, being mindful of generations to come. So you all may take a seat. And Larry, if you want to take 5 or 6 minutes to give us an address.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to thank you. I want to thank all members of council. I want to thank the community for following through on some of the fundamental calls to action of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which is to take steps like this to honor the cultural diversity that is the strength of the relationship that has become Canada. And I just want to reflect real quickly. I carry a replica of a wampum belt called the Pledge of the Crown Belt. And so it was because of the Treaty of Niagara that Indigenous peoples participated in the War of 1812 to defend Canada's boundaries. And there's unprecedented participation. There's actually a professor at the Royal Military College in Kingston that said he doesn't know of any other situation where the percentage of men who volunteered were equivalent to the kind of participation among Indigenous peoples, particularly in this area. Historical records say that there was one or two men left in most of the communities, and usually they were either disabled, very old. So it was because of the bond that was created in 1764. President Madison in the U.S. at the end of the War of 1812 sent hawks and doves. The British sent junior representatives, thinking that it was in Europe. The negotiations were in Ghent, Belgium, and the Americans dismissed the promise made between Tecumseh and General Brock. And but they knew they had to do something, so they created Article 9 and affirmed all the rights that were had been acknowledged at the Treaty of Niagara in 1764, but they didn't have they made sure there was no enforcement mechanism. But they did create this wampum belt, and actually a friend of mine who worked at Plenty Canada in Lanark became the acting director of the Smithsonian Museum of the American Indian, and found this belt buried in the archives and had it repatriated. This, I repeat though, is a replica. But in it, the Crown made the belt. The Crown, in 1764 and in 1815, spoke Indigenous languages, shared in protocol on a regular basis, and actually made these wampum belts that were made from quahog shells. The art of making the shell was lost until very recently, and I'm about to show you a couple, but the Crown, when it passed this belt over to all the nations that had been there in 1764 except one, said it will be the first law, that the seven grandfather gifts and the first law. And I've heard a Ojibwe professor in Osgood Hall speak to this, but the first law is love. And what the Crown said to the Indigenous people is, quote, it will be our love and affection that gets us through difficult times ahead. And so these are parallel lines, and they represent Indigenous and people at that time of European descent. Elders since recognize, of course, all who have come since that time, the immigrants and who contribute to our societies and contribute culturally. But a promise was made to continue to live under natural law, to care for the land. And therein lies, in my view, the answers to climate change and the Convention on Biological Diversity. We've gotten lost in separating our economies from our environment, our social and cultural strengths, and so territorial, provincial, and federal governments created in response to the National Advisory Panel and the Indigenous Circle of Experts, created One with Nature. And actually, I recommend people take a look at what has your government done. There's actually a $1.3 billion fund, I was reminded today, to make this all happen. If you go to pages 14 and 15, we'll see if I can get there. So this was a pipe ceremony that I led on Maple Island, and because it was in Algonquin territory, even though there were other senior elders, protocol was such that Algonquins led it. But in short, there was an endorsement of working together. I was today at an IUCN annual meeting, and I reminded them that we've raised the bar. We're bringing both Western science, traditional knowledge systems together to address our need to make changes, to reflect on our commitment to the continuation of life, our commitment to future generations. And I applaud the statement that Mississippi Mills Council is prepared to make. I think this is a very special moment, not only for Mississippi Mills, I would say for Lanier County, but I'd also say not only for Lanier County. You're taking a leadership role here that, sure, there's other cities and jurisdictions that have done similar things, but I showed it to Dan Longboat, who's now head of the Ontario Indigenous Education Initiative, and there are about seven Indigenous institutions that will confer degrees, like First Nations Training Technical Institute in Tiendanega, for example. But he read the acknowledgement. I know it actually got edited since then, but he read it and he said, "You know, Larry, I think this is the best one I've ever seen." So I thought I'd share that feedback. But once again, Chimigwich, which is a big thank you, but it's also more than a big thank you. It's actually saying, from my spirit to yours, in recognition that we are equal. The life within me is the life within you. We enrich our lives by taking steps like this. So that's what Chimigwich means, or thank you, or merci beaucoup. honoring all the languages. So, Mireille, is there anything you want to share?
You said it all, Larry.
Yeah, I should tell you I'll tell you what my family says later. But
well, thank you to you both for being here today. I think this is important work that we have done here, we have started here, and I appreciate you both sharing your knowledge, your wisdom, and your contribution to the renewal of good relationships. So thank you.
Miigwech. I mentioned wampum shells, that somebody figured out how to drill the holes in them and do wampum belts. I understand we're going to have a little reception. I'll be happy to show them then.
Sure. I did want to mention the pages that you had noted. We have copies just on that side table if anyone was interested in that. There are copies the article that Elder Larry had identified there. And we will take a short recess. We're going to have a moment to break food together, break bread together. Everything is in wrappers because it is cold and flu season. So we want to break bread and enjoy fellowship and friendship without passing colds and flus. So that's why there's maybe overpackaging going on. But just before I call the recess, would you like to, or either of you like to provide a blessing for the foods?
Yeah.
Would you like them to be here?
I can see the food. I'm actually going to do a quick smudge. But yeah.
Do you want to bring them over?
What you thinking? Oh, no, it's
still going?
It's still going. Yeah. So yeah, I'll just stand. So what I like to perfect. Kwekwe Kijimanadu, great spirit in our Algonquin language. Wamsi Indinjakos, that's my Algonquin name, Bignado. Makwan Dodam, Bear Clan, Shabbat Bajwan Indijaba, which is the First Nation that I'm associated with. Chimigwich, for the food, we say we honor the plants and animals that have fulfilled their responsibilities to creation in order that we may fulfill ours. And we thank those who have grown the food, prepared the food, and we share the food in a good spirit, in a good way, in order that we may continue working together. Miigwech.
Thank you. So let's have a recess for about 10 minutes or so. Let's come back at 10 to 7. And thank you for a very meaningful ceremony. Thank you both.
I guess I just have to pay attention. I know I have to clear the deck before they start back again. That'll be fairly quick.
Yeah. No, I just have an orange. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Oh, we just stay here, do we? Or are we going in there?
How do they want to do this?
Okay. Gotcha. Seen that?
That's his newest one.
That's his newest one.
Yeah, I have it on order.
Oh, yeah.
I have it on order.
Yes, thank you.
It was really excellent.
Yeah, good. Oh, okay. Thank you.
Test. One, two, three. going to call the meeting back to order. See, we still have lots of people. That's exciting. So we are going to move to our deputation of the evening. So we have Julie Stewart, who is the county planner, and Nikki Dwyer, who is our director of planning. We're going to take a seat at the presentation table. I'll also introduce, we have Leslie Drennan with us, Kurt Graves, and Richard Kidd in the front row from the county as well. So welcome to you. Thank you for being here. Welcome. So I would ask, yeah, these guys, just like at the county, you have to hit them. And if you can pull it fairly close where we do record, but it needs to be fairly close for it to pick up.
Wireless.
Perfect. So Julie has a presentation here on the official plan, and it was in response to some questions that councillors at this table had. So I will pass it along to you.
Good, thank you.
Just save all questions to the end, please, folks.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for the invitation. So I just have a fairly general and brief presentation. So we were requested to come and speak about a few items. So the role of Lanark County as the approval authority, Sustainable Communities official plan, and Mississippi Mills official plan amendment. So the role of the county as the approval authority, or the approval authority for local official plans and official plan amendments, subdivisions, condominiums, part lot control, and consents, which we have a land division committee that process goes through. So the county, the Sustainable Communities official plan, not close enough. Okay, thank you. Was adopted in 2012 and at that time approved by Municipal Affairs in 2013. In 2017, the county initiated a review of the population projections for the county as a whole to the year 2038. So after extensive consultation throughout 2018 with local municipalities, the County Council approved the population projections for 96,000 for the entire county, and you can see on the slide like the breakdown for all the municipalities. Mississippi Mills is at 21,000. And these are projections, so those numbers are allocated to the municipalities, and that number can be accommodated. It's up to the municipality to do that. But the intent is to enable local municipalities to provide for growth within the municipality. And we did commit at that time to review those numbers every 5 years. And the numbers are for, so Mississippi Mills has different settlement areas. So there's urban settlement areas, which would be Elmont, Carlton Place, and Perth within the county. Within Mississippi Mills, the rural settlement areas would be the villages and hamlets, so Pakenham, Clayton. So the population projection numbers are for the entire municipality. So Mississippi Mills Community Official Plan Amendment Number 21 was a five-year review that took a bit more than 5 years for various reasons. So I'll just speak briefly about three main areas that were subject to modifications at the county: future urban expansion areas, natural heritage, and agriculture. And throughout the process, there was consultation with the municipality as well. So in terms of settlement area expansion, so this item has been modified in the official plan amendment that has been approved. So settlement area expansions, for them to occur, there's a comprehensive review for the proposed expansion, which is to be supported by studies such as demographic projections, which that number has been provided by the county as a whole. There needs to be an analysis of intensification, redevelopment, and existing vacant lot inventories, studies of water, wastewater, and stormwater servicing plans, and to ensure that the settlement expansion would include or comply with the MDS formula. So the result at the end of a comprehensive review could be that those areas could be expanded and include within a settlement area. So natural heritage systems was another modification, and this was an agreement between the municipality and the county to defer a decision on natural heritage system policies pending the results of the provincial policy statement update, which was initiated in 2019 and is still occurring. So that item has been deferred, and agricultural was also modified. This was a request from Mississippi Mills Council to the county to defer a decision on defining prime agricultural lands and the policies pending a LEER review to be conducted at the local level. So that was agreed to as well. So there has been a decision made on official plan amendment number 21, and the decision complies with the PPS and the Sustainable Communities official plan. At this time, an appeal has been received and it has been sent to LPAT, which is a local planning appeal tribunal. So that's essentially where it is at this time. But
excellent, thank you. That's a good high level overview. We appreciate that. Do we have questions to either of our planners? Councillor Ferguson.
Yes, thank you. Well, thank you, Julie. You certainly brought some very able escorts with you anyway to back you up here. So I do have some questions because of the popularity of the OP in Mississippi Mills, obviously, but a couple of them. One reference to severances. We hear through our, obviously, residents, the time involved with severances. Is there a set time? Are they dragging? Are they on schedule type of thing? How long does it actually take now for a severance to go through?
I would say a severance is 3 to 6 months. We do have, in 2019, we had, I think it was 153 consent applications, which is 35 more than the year before. There's varying reasons as to why some may take longer than that. Some, for example, ones in an urban area take less than that. They take less time. So when we receive an application at the county, provided it's a complete application, it's circulated to the health unit and the conservation authority. So there may be some time delays there, especially if the application is submitted in the winter and those inspections can't be done. So there is a variety of reasons why there may be. I guess if there's specific inquiries, then just inquire to myself,
right,
and we can look into it.
Okay.
Councillor Ferguson, if you don't mind giving your questions through the chair, I might
moving
them around. We've got a lot of people here, so we might end up directing them to someone else.
Okay, sure.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay, the determination on hydro G versus well tests. Again, we see certain indications or differences sometimes where there is a hydro G versus a well test. So what's the determination specifically for that if there is a difference?
Okay. Is that something?
For consent?
Yeah, for consent.
For consent. I think there is policies in the official plan. So sometimes the conditions, mostly when there's a condition about that, it would be imposed, come through as a condition from the municipality. Some cases there is requirements for the study to be done up front. And again, that depends on if it's an area that's sensitive. That requirement may come ahead of the decision or maybe part of the decision. So I guess there's not one solid answer to that.
I can just jump in. For those who aren't maybe aware of the lingo, can you, either of you, explain what a hydro G is and what it stands for and what it is?
So a hydrogeological study. So for consent applications, it's more of a scoped study. For example, if you're creating lots in an area has substantial development, you want to ensure that lot you're creating has sufficient water quality and quantity, then you would have an engineer, a hydrogeologist, or a geoscientist prepare a scoped hydro G, which would look at surrounding wells, water quality, do a test well, and provide a report to support that it would support it.
Okay. You had another comment too?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. To Councillor Ferguson's point, we are very blessed in Mississippi Mills to have good water. There are very few places in the municipality where we do get concerned about water quality and quantity. That said, our OP, like many other OPs across the province, require development to occur on 1 hectare areas of land. So if a consent application comes in for something that is less than 1 hectare, and that's not uncommon in our settlement areas, Clayton, Pakenham, Blakeney, where we do want to see dense development on smaller lots, but anytime we're seeing a development proposal for something less than 1 hectare, the default is to look at water quality and quantity right off the start.
Certainly the mayor's address tonight, or the mayor's review, does identify the fact that at Roma, the minister, in his wisdom, or hopefully it was his wisdom, identified the expansion of the boundary settlement areas made to be made easier. Have you heard any additional information specifically to that?
It was a kind of an interesting passing comment at Roma when Minister Clark made that comment. Have either of you heard anything further to that?
No.
I think Julie and I actually sat together at the last session that MMAH held, and that was, what, September of last year?
Yeah.
The ministry has gotten largely quiet since then. That was their fact-finding mission. They got a lot of feedback from the planners that day.
Yeah.
And then they kind of walked away and didn't tell us anything else. So that has been kind of status quo since then. Mm-hmm. I think we are all patiently waiting for feedback from MMAH, and we're hoping that it comes sooner than later. But at this point, Minister Clark's office has not even given us an estimated timeline on when we could see something come forward. The answer seems to just be soon. And soon keeps getting longer and longer and longer.
Okay. Do you have anything to add on that? Councillor Maiden, I'm just going to discuss here with Councillor Ferguson. I know you have a list, so I'm going to break it up. Yeah, we'll just have a little break from Councillor Ferguson here. Go ahead, Councillor Maiden.
I understand that under the provincial policy statement, the PPS, that expansion of settlement boundaries is supposed to be cost-effective, efficient, and close to existing services. We have kind of an interesting situation here in that we have something that's within the settlement boundary that's prime agricultural land. It was put in the settlement boundary, I think, in the 1800s, back when prime agricultural land was not as valued, perhaps, as it is now. I'm wondering if you have any recommendations as to how the municipality could deal with that, because it would be very expensive and there are no existing services near it. So if we were going to expand there, should we take it out, or what should we do? Like, how should we handle that with the county?
Madam Chair, and Julie, perhaps I'll ask you to go back to your slide that talks about how we expand settlement boundary. So one of the things that Julie's slide does not include, but is equally as important, is the analysis of agricultural land and fragmentation of ag land in our community. I think it's premature for either of us to really answer that question without doing planning justification review and comp review of development across the community and projecting out what our needs are. There is potential that the land already within the boundary is disturbed and planned for such development that it makes it illogical for it to come out. However, that's not a guarantee, and I think that's part of why there's such a scrutiny at the time of settlement boundary review that involves multiple eyes looking at the proposal to ensure that we are making good, sustainable decisions for the future of our community.
Okay. Councillor Dalgety.
Thank you.
Just a reminder that the comments and questions will go through the chair, please.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. You don't have to call me ma'am, though. That's too far.
My question is pertaining to waiting on the changes for the PPS in correlation with the comprehensive reviews. Is this something that's happened throughout the county? We're waiting to see what the outcome before we make a move with the comprehensive reviews. And are you aware, is this happening all over the province as well? to make the decision to move forward with comprehensive reviews or what state we should move on it.
Mr. Do you have feedback for that from the rest of the province and whatnot?
Not really. I guess like a comprehensive review is a municipal decision to do, and we don't actually have any other official plans in process right now. And Mississippi Mills official plan amendment was in process for a number of years. So I think that was the decision to proceed with that, to kind of close that.
Madam Chair. Anecdotally, Councillor Dalgety, I would say it doesn't seem like it has slowed down municipalities from conducting general operational business. I mean, the PPS today and the Planning Act mandates that we'll look at our plan every 5 years. I can safely say that within my 10-year career, I think we've gone through three new PPSs. Mm-hmm. So this is not something that's unusual. Anytime a new PPS comes out, there's a chance that a policy direction is dramatically going to change. The benefit of doing five-year reviews is that you're constantly changing your own local policies. So to put one on hold waiting for the other, you're going to be chasing your tail around and around and around. I know from monitoring planning activity across the province, there are certainly other municipalities that are currently doing their OP. Ottawa just launched their consultation. I think it was last year. I think Kingston had been talking about doing it. I don't know if it's actually gone public yet, but certainly a future amendment to the PPS is never a reason to postpone decision-making at the local level.
This, my second part of that, with the comprehensive review, and is there any advantage to doing a LEER at the same time, or would a full comprehensive review basically cover most of the LEER information? If we have to do the LEER on the entire municipality or just a certain area?
The LEER would be a separate process to the comprehensive review.
Yeah, so it's two separate processes. Mm-hmm. Comprehensive review is in regards to expansion of settlement areas, and LEER is related to agricultural land, so it is separate. But again, that's a municipal decision as to the timing of when they want to.
So there's no overlap between the two?
I wouldn't say there wouldn't be any overlap. Potentially there could be some overlap.
Thank you.
And just a reminder, too, for not necessarily yourself, Councillor Dalgety, but for anyone in the gallery, it was a council who had requested that a LEER be considered. And a LEER is a land evaluation area review. Yeah? There we go. And it was in response to some feedback that was received from the Agricultural Committee in the previous council. The agricultural mapping was concerning to the Agricultural Committee, and a LEER seemed like the only other option that we had. And we were fortunate that the county was amenable to having that put in place rather than adopting the agricultural mapping as was. Did you have another question, Councillor Dalgety? Okay, we're gonna go back to Councillor Ferguson.
Thank you very much. Modernization is the buzzword of the 20s, I guess now. Is there any duplication or is there any extra costings that associated with the county versus municipalities whereby there could be savings identified?
Is that something you want to stab? Not sure.
I think you're asking us to write ourselves out of a job.
You're both very valuable. But.
And quite frankly, I think that question merits a much higher paying salary answer that either Julie or I can provide. So we're going to carefully deflect that one and suggest you do that offline. You let us know how it goes.
Yeah. It's kind of like an asking turkeys how they feel about Thanksgiving, you know?
Great.
Councillor Holmes.
Thank you. And through the chair, I'm still a little bit confused about the LEER. I understand that we had made that decision. But I guess what I'm wanting to ask is land that's designated as agriculture, and you were considering bringing it into the settlement boundaries, if there was not, is there other alternatives besides a LEER that could be done just for that land and not the whole municipality?
So,
Ms. George?
If the lands are within, proposed to be within a settlement area that are prime agricultural lands, your comprehensive review can address those lands. And if it's determined that they're not prime agricultural, they're not needed for agricultural, there's no other settlement lands that potentially could be developed, those can be brought into the settlement area. The provincial policy statement addresses that specifically.
So then to be clear, if they're not in the settlement area now, a LEER is required in order to bring them in?
No.
No?
Okay. A LEER is a separate.
So maybe I'll just clarify that. So if they're brought in, if there's a decision to bring them in through the process of this is needed, then there's no LEER that needs to be done on that land?
Right.
Okay.
But it is two, a LEER is a separate.
Yeah, I understand they're separate, yeah. But I guess what I'm trying to straighten out in my mind is that once the decision is made to bring that land in, even if it's agriculture land, it does not require a LEER.
It's part of your comprehensive review, so it would have to address that, can there be, you'd have to look at, can it be serviced? Is it feasible to service it? Are there other lands that should be brought in instead of agricultural lands? There's a number of criteria that need to be met. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
To do that.
Madam Chair, perhaps to clarify, to Councillor Holmes' point, there are other ways to evaluate the value of agricultural lands beyond a LEER. To Julie's point, if we were to do so through a comprehensive review, there would still be a component where you look at the quality of that land, but not necessarily through a land evaluation area review exercise. Okay? The information that Julie and I have received from OMAFRA, because we have both spoken to OMAFRA about land use planning on ag lands and how we deal with this, indicated that site-selected studies on soil composition could be undertaken as part of the comprehensive review to justify bringing that area in. Even that aside, we'd still have to be able to justify that there are no other logical expansion areas to grow into. Okay?
Okay. So we're coming up on the 25-minute mark here. I think Deputy Mayor Minnelli, did you have a comment?
Just a couple of comments and one question.
Sure. There you go.
With respect to the timing and of the severances and the length it takes, I've asked these questions before. Usually it's environmental assessment or comments or objections to the severance that holds it up at the county level. And most banks require a hydrogeological study to get your financing to build anyways. So it's not this to do with that. And I'm not going to touch delegation of authority.
Thank you.
And the LEER, I think, is going to be beneficial for the agricultural community, for the whole county. I think we should proceed with it and get on with it. So thank you.
Okay. Well, I think we'll leave it there. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for the whole team of support from Lanark County. It's nice to see you here. And thank you very much, Julie. So with that, I am looking for a mover and seconder to receive the deputation by Julie Stewart. Councillor Maiden, Councillor Holmes, all those in favor? Thank you. And that brings us to our public meeting. I'll let planner catch your breath. There is a sign-in sheet on the side table if you wanted to speak to the amendment, the proposed amendment. If you can have your name on that list, we'll ask for you to provide your comments in a moment.
Sorry, we're cramped today.
Take your time.
I'm going to start with the meeting preamble. The public meeting tonight is being conducted by council, and notice has been given in accordance with the Planning Act. It is a statutory public meeting for the purpose of giving the public the opportunity to make representations in respect to the proposed bylaw amendment. If a person or public body does not make oral submissions at a public meeting or make written submissions to the municipality of Mississippi Mills before a bylaw is passed, the person or public body is not entitled to appeal the decision of council to the local planning appeals tribunal, and may not be added as a party to the hearing of an appeal before the tribunal unless, in the opinion of the tribunal, there are reasonable grounds to do so. If a person or public body provides an oral submission, the municipality asks that they clearly state their name for the record and that they leave their name and address and appropriate on the appropriate notification sheet located on the table next to the council chamber's entrance. Further, any person wishing to be advised of council's decision with respect to tonight's application is also requested to leave their name and address on the same sheet. In general, any application heard at tonight's meeting will be forwarded to the next committee of the whole meeting, granted that concerns or comments can be addressed in that time period. If not, an application may be forwarded to a later date. Thanks for your patience. Tonight, our public meeting, we only have one public meeting, but it is a combined public meeting. It's for an official plan amendment and a concurrent zoning bylaw amendment. This will be OPA 23 and zoning file Z16-19. It affects a large block of land in Riverfront Estates, which is the new subdivision on the south end of town. The owner is Hoochiami Holdings, and the agent is McIntosh Perry. So in general, the purpose of the amendments are to recognize development of a 44-unit apartment building located on the subject lands identified in the image below. The community official plan recognizes a general maximum net density of medium density developments, which this constitutes, as 35 units per hectare. The proposed amendment seeks a net site density of 94 units per hectare. The purpose of the zoning amendment is twofold. One, it is to recognize a reduction in a setback from the adjacent agricultural lands to the south of the site from 10 meters to 6 meters, and also to increase the maximum density of the property from one dwelling unit per 137 meters squared of lot area to one dwelling unit per 106 meters squared of lot area. The proposed development has evolved as part of the multi-phase riverfront development. The proposal for the subdivision approval originally always included a high-density residential block, medium-density residential block. However, the location of that subject site has moved. So originally, the site was further located up Spring Street. This is Spring Street here and the Mississippi River here. It has since been located to the site that it's at now. This was done through an official plan, or sorry, rather a subdivision redline amendment in the fall of 2017. The areas of these two sites are approximately the same. This site today now houses townhomes. When we look at subdivision applications, we do conduct general net density and gross density target analysis across all five phases. Anytime we make changes through redline amendments in subsequent phase registrations, we go through and confirm that the density targets are still being met. In both the original design and the redline revision of 2017, density targets were satisfied. However, at that time, no number of units was proposed for the high density development block because it was unknown at that time what the development would look like. The site, of course, is serviced by municipal water and sanitary services, and because it is located on Johanna Street, it is accessible primarily by Johanna Street, although its frontage is on Spring Street, and it does have pedestrian access to Spring Street. The community official plan, not surprisingly, identifies the site as residential, as it does with the rest of the subdivision development. However, it is notable that the project sits immediately on the boundary of not only the agricultural land and residential land, but within the settlement boundary of Elmont Ward. Anything located to the south of the site, noted as agricultural on this land, on this map, is in Ramsey Township and outside the settlement boundary. Anything identified in purple residential is within Elmont Ward and is in the settlement boundary. Like I said, generally speaking, our OP provides general density targets. They are not fixed targets. It is not uncommon for us to receive official plan amendments to allow some flexibility in those. We have analyzed, and I won't go through the details of the analysis in the report, but we have analyzed other components of the proposal's compliance with the community official plan. It does appear, as presented, to conform to all other sections of the plan. The only challenge becomes that it does not meet the 35 units per net hectare. Sorry. It's a long report. With respect to the zoning, the developer has provided conceptual drawings. They are not fixed at this time. They will be by the time we get to site plan control. So there is a fair amount of flexibility to modify the design based on feedbacks received from the community, and the developer has indicated a willingness to do so. We have done a brief review of the concept design proposed, and it does comply with most of the provisions of the zoning bylaw, with the exception of those two which it seeks relief from. Beyond that, at this time, we have circulated notice of the application in accordance with the Planning Act. Because the subject lands is immediately surrounded by lands owned by the current owner of the site, we used our authority under the Planning Act to post notice in the paper rather than circulating by mail, because every single property owner within 100% or 120 meters of the subject site was property owned by the owner. From that notification, we have received one general inquiry from a resident interested in acquiring a unit, which is good news, not one we normally get. Staff received correspondence from Ms. Tracy Julian, a resident of Elmont, respecting the proposal's contribution to affordable housing. Part of that has been addressed in this staff report, but will more fully be addressed in the concluding staff report that will come following this. We also received comments from Ms. Susan Cannon, who indicated she was a resident of Riverfront Estates, and she expressed concerns related to the appropriateness of a requested reduction in the setback to the agricultural lands and general nonconformity with the official plan. A copy of all written comments received are attached for consideration, and the final staff report will analyze the merits of the application and all public comments that we receive between now and then.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dwyer. So just a reminder, this is the opportunity for the public to comment. Council will have an opportunity to discuss this when it comes back to committee. And with that, I believe we have a consultant with McIntosh Perry who wanted to speak. It's not normally this crowded to get through the gallery. If you want to just take a seat, thank you. Thank you. And we do record our meetings, and it's recorded through the microphone. So if you can keep it fairly close to you, that'll help us out.
Perfect. So good evening, councillors, staff, and members of the public. I'm Ben Clare. I'm a planner with McIntosh Perry. I believe you saw Stephanie Morris on this particular development of previous phases of the subdivision, previously at Foten, and I'm kind of taking over and assisting the Hoochamy family with this development. Billy Hoochamy is in attendance this evening, as well as Peter Mansfield, who's the architect of record for the project. I've been asked to be fairly brief, to try and stick to 5 or 6 minutes, so I'll do my best. So just a short outline. I have about 7 slides with content. I'm going to talk about subject lands, as Nikki's already done, introduce the proposal at a high level, and I'll touch on key policy and zoning considerations. So these are the subject lands. I'm sure a lot of people in attendance are generally familiar. They're in the south part of Almont in Phase 5 of Riverfront Estates, just east of the river, and a future extension of Spring Street. As Nikki mentioned, the site has frontage on Johanna. The property is legally known as a Block 70 within the Plana subdivision. And the subject lands are just under half a hectare. So this is the kind of a close-up of the site plan. Frontage on Johanna again, two points of access. I wonder if this has a laser. Is there a, yeah, kind of. So two points of access, this is Johanna here. This site plan is kind of flipped. So here's the north arrow here. North is actually at the bottom of the page. So two points of access here, underground parking off to the west, which is this side of the page. Principal entrance over here to the east. There's 23 parking spaces proposed above ground, including two barrier-free spaces here near the entrance. And the required 9 visitor parking spaces. Agricultural lands, as Nikki mentioned, to the rear or the south, and a future semi-detached dwelling over here to the east. 48% of the property is landscaped, so you can see some trees kind of conceptually put in here for now. So quite a bit of landscape in there. And the side and rear yards are shown as well. One of the primary design considerations was accessibility, ensuring the parking drop-offs were located in close proximity to the principal entrance without steps. Similarly, kind of within the interior of the building, the elevator bank, main stairs, common activity room, and waste areas are all located in close proximity to the main entrance. The development might kind of be targeted towards seniors. It's not formally assisted living or anything like that, but something that client has in mind. These are the floor plans, so if I could just back up very quickly. This is the first floor plan. And then the next, the upper two stories, this is the second floor and the third floor. So all units have either exterior terraces or balconies, as you can see, if you squint, perhaps. Third floor here, this kind of boundary around the third floor, represents a 2-meter step back from the first and second floors. And that's intended to kind of soften the visual impact of the building. See that in the elevations here in a minute. And the underground parking here, as shown, contains a total of 39 spaces, two of which are barrier-free. And there's interior storage lockers provided as well. In terms of the unit mix, just for interest perhaps, there's 31 one-bedroom units proposed right now and 13 two-bedroom units. So a reasonable mix. It's not all small units here. Architectural, so these are the architectural renderings. It's important to point out, as Nikki alluded to, this is conceptual at this point. It wasn't just kind of slapped together. There's a lot of thought that's gone into this, and likely the final product will look a lot like this, but that is going to be hammered out at the site plan phase after staff comments and input we might hear this evening. There's somewhat of a focus on stone or brick. And the approach is to achieve a bit of a modern design while being sympathetic to the low density or low rise nature, rather, of the residential units in the vicinity. And the rendering does a good job of illustrating that step back on the third floor. Architect, again, Peter Mansfield is in attendance, and if councillors or members of the public have specific questions on the design, he might be able to field some of those. Three slides on policy to kind of wrap up my presentation. The proposal is consistent with the matters of provincial interest as identified within the Planning Act, specifically in relation to providing a full range of housing in the community and in an appropriate location. Proposal is consistent with the provincial policy statement in that it improves the mix of residential uses at an appropriate density. So we've seen a fair bit of similar urban form to date, although it's evolved to include more semis and townhouses and now rental apartments. Proposal conforms to Lanark County OP. Population is growing, as we heard this evening. And the proposal contributes to the range of housing types that will accommodate that growth. Proposal represents intensification, is of increased density, and is in proximity to open space. A fair bit on the Municipality of Mississippi Mills Community Official Plan. The proposal conforms in that the use is permitted, to start with. The proposal supports policy intended to provide a more balanced, affordable, and diverse supply of housing, including rental opportunities, and that's important. Proposed density, which, as Nikki mentioned, is the trigger for the official plan amendment, helps the overall neighborhood, which is kind of low density with respect to the targets in the official plan right now. It helps the overall neighborhood achieve the town's density targets, both in terms of mix and units per hectare. The proposal is for 44 rental units, which supports the town's target supply of rental of 70% ownership, 30% rental. With respect to affordable housing, and the comment from Ms. Julian, it's my opinion that the proposal does improve housing choice in Elmont considerably. These are rental units, which shouldn't be taken lightly. It's going to increase the supply of housing, new housing for individuals who either cannot access home ownership or choose not to. However, and we haven't, we've tried to be clear on this, the units will be rented at market rate, and it's not intended that the units would be considered affordable as defined within the official plan or the PPS. It's a possibility, but that's not part of the proposal. However, the proposal in this regard does meet the obligations in the official plan. So with respect to assessing the impact of the proposal, pre-consultation, there were a couple requirements with respect to impact in addition to the planning rationale. There's a requirement to update the traffic assessment for the subdivision phase, and this a servicing and stormwater management report would need to be analyzed, or would need to be provided, rather. Those studies were carried out, and only minor impact was revealed with respect to traffic generation. With respect to the agricultural lands and the development's proximity to the agricultural lands, Section 3616 of the official plan triggers a need for an agricultural assessment. This is in relation to Ms. Cannon's comment as well. The official plan amendment addresses that requirement, as the official plan requires a 30-meter setback and a reduced setback of 6 meters as proposed. It should be noted, as I will get into in a moment here, that the zoning bylaw actually only requires a 10-meter setback, so there's a bit of a discrepancy there. The proposal with respect to zoning is in keeping with the R4 zoning. The proposal supports the purposes of the zone to permit a mix of medium-density residential uses, including three-story apartment, including the three-story apartment building. The parking and landscaping requirements of the zoning bylaw are addressed, and other development standards are generally satisfied. There could be some fine tuning as a result of changes that we make as a result of comments we hear tonight. The zoning bylaw amendment is required in relation to density and in relation to the reduced setback to the agricultural lands. The requirement for density, as identified in the second last bullet there in the official plan, is 137 square meters per unit, and what's proposed is 106 square meters of land for the proposal. And just for everyone's interest, when the amount of, the difference between the 94 units per hectare is proposed and 35 is referred to, the 35 units per hectare is intended to address medium density within the area, within the subdivision. And that's evidenced by the permitted 137 square meters of land per unit, which equates to about 74 units per hectare as of right in your zoning bylaw. So that 35 to 94 is somewhat of a misnomer, for lack of a better term. And that's the end of my 5 or 6 minute presentation, hopefully. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. So I have a list here of folks. We'll start at the top of the list here. I would ask that you focus your comments because we have a fairly hefty agenda here this evening. I'll only have everyone speak once. So do focus your thoughts, please. If there are other comments that you'd like to provide or you don't wish to speak but would like to provide comments, you can certainly do so in writing as well. So first on the list here, I have Dave Benson. Mr. Dave Benson?
I have no comments.
No comments. All right. Thank you for joining us all the same. Jill and Chris Morris.
That's me. I just would like to
clarify. So actually, if you wouldn't mind coming, I need you to speak into the microphone, please.
Okay.
You're not going to? Okay. We can speak after if you'd like. Okay. Tom and Barb Otter. All right. I think I've scared everybody off tonight or something. I'm not sure what's going on. What's that? Oh, sure. Would you like a microphone to come to you instead? Our CEO has offered to come up with a microphone if that's more comfortable. Okay. We'll speak after. Mr. Paul Schnitker.
I don't stir off easy, Kristen.
Okay. Good evening, Paul.
I did bring copies of the presentation that I can share, if that's helpful.
So we could take that and give it to the clerk, because there's no decision making or discussion with council this evening. It's just for the public this evening. Thanks, Paul.
So, Honorable Mayor, councillors, and staff, my name is Paul Schnitker from Ramsey Ward, and thank you for allowing me time to speak here this evening. I'm going to preface the comments that I've wrote with kind of an umbrella covering the considerations that are here. As the site plan develops, there's going to be some changes, and so some of my comments are kind of an umbrella covering that the project is designed to be at market rent. So who is the tenant and how that project meshes as it moves forward with the affordable housing accommodation that we wish to accommodate as well. Okay, so having said that, I'll start in here. The first computer belonged to Adam and Eve. It was an Apple. It had limited memory, and with only one byte, the whole world crashed and went another direction. Ever since then, we have relied on improved and faster technology to help us shape our future based on statistics and developing trends, such as your challenge as you try to envision our future housing in a community that has changed dramatically from the first orchard. I admire your passion as you help plan ahead, doing so out of your love for our community and the outstandingly large financial remuneration you receive. You have much statistical and factual information concerning that. That was supposed to be a joke. Thanks. Okay. You have much statistical and factual information concerning the development in front of you prepared by staff. My hope is to broaden that view with my opinion of current developing trends, trends that in my profession I deal with on a day-to-day basis, trends which become our future statistics. My opinion tonight stems from being an active local realtor. My designations as a seniors real estate specialist with the National Association of Realtors, a commercial agent status with Century 21, plus as a professional with in-depth local involvement, having earned 2019 status of the top 40 in units sales nationally out of over 10,000 agents, enhanced by my involvement in sales and rentals of similar product to the applicants in the Carlton Place and Mississippi Mills area. Mississippi Mills and Lynert County are unique from many other locales. From the early settlement days, there has been a historical movement of the working class demographic to the Ottawa and more urban cores for employment. thus leaving the zone heavier on the residential makeup versus the commercial tax base, an issue of regular discussion amongst you as councillors. The mature and retired demographic make up a much larger percentage than normal in Lanark County than nationally. This is much more pronounced in Mississippi Mills than even Carlton Place, our neighbor. Recent real estate trends show that the mature demographic, given a preference, prefer to stay in the community they love and know, or return to it to be closer to family and friends. This trend is extremely visible from the GTA in Southern Ontario, where retirees no longer tied to the area for employment are choosing to cash in their lottery ticket on housing prices in the expanded Toronto market and make an economic and an emotional decision to relocate to home and friends and family, helping to accelerate our maturing demographic growth. More strain on local politicians to develop support services and housing suitable for this market. Newer homes versus older are offering better accessibility issues. One floor living with minimal steps, close access to shopping and medical facilities, improved insulation and vapor barriers to the elements and the transfer of communicable disease, underground parking for safety and conveniences from accidental slips in our winter months, plus in apartment complexes, companionship and support with like-minded folks. A second identifiable trend in this group is their desire to rent versus own as they plan more flexibility into their longevity of life through renting. Ease to enjoy their golden years stress-free from concerns of maintaining a property. Freedom to take a vacation at will. Spend time with the grandkids or community culture and clubs. Flexibility to be able to spin on a dime when it becomes time to move on to the next higher level of accommodation care. Another positive support for affordable housing is that the middle affluent mature demographics who are homeowners and choose their next apartment or condo style living stay in our community, keeping their economic support for the community as well. Plus, additionally, the sale of their home starts a domino effect that ends up with the affordable housing at the end of the domino row. This effect has been very evident in the $50 million investment of the Lapine Group in the Carlton Place market. Given the opportunity for a desired product missing from the marketplace, the largest majority of new tenants are from the local area, contributing to the domino effect described. The $50 million experiment paid off in spades for everyone, including the town in tax revenues. Phase 2 was moved up and Building 3 was advanced by 6 months in completion. More affordable housing is being created as the housing inventory rolls over. The economic activity of the new tenant is maintained in the community. The huge success of this project contributed to the investment of 376 units in Renfrew, which goes to public meeting in a few weeks, and a third similar project which will become public very shortly. Thus, the requirement for faster change in the housing style we supply. While there is strong support for our responsibility to supply affordable housing to those needing it, we also have a responsibility to supply for the more affluent retiree group who have been and continue to be taxpayers. I am a supporter that towns such as ours in the province need a balanced approach to developing housing, embracing as diverse a number of styles and quantity as the marketplace will support, provided that the municipality can adapt efficiently to the services required to support that direction. This group looks for places of comfort in their own community that they can compare to their current standard to prevent them from migrating to another center, taking their economic participation in our community with them if they leave. The other trend for those wishing to stay in the community due to lack of a place they are comfortable with is as they age in place, which creates its own added burden of community support requirements, especially for those in rural areas. Aging in place places unneeded stress on the lives of those who can no longer maintain their real estate, but find the real estate managing them. Life is too short to not be able to enjoy living in the comfort of your own home at a comfort level that suits your health, emotional, and economic needs. I applaud developers such as Billy, who recognize the needs of the many in their vision as they mold statistics and trends into their projections. Projections that they risk all in hoping that they are doing the right thing for their community. Far be it from us to deny them a little financial return in their investment if our future turns out to be the right one for all of us. Our housing needs in this community are further complicated by the current housing market. Shortages and longer times to build more homes for households of a declining size, plus immigration from other centers, find us in an accelerating trend of building starts. supply and demands that have made Ottawa area the current hottest resale market in the country, obvious by Ottawa marketing price trends. Over the last 5 years, 33.92% growth in value, 6.78% annually. Over the last 3 years, 27.8% increase in value, or 9.3% annually. Over the last 12 months, 12.2% and 12.2% annual increase. Into the last 6 months, 7.2% increase, annualized to 14.42. The last 3 months, 4.32% increase in value, annualized to 17.28%. And in the last month, price increases of 1.49%. This is the whole entire Ottawa board area, or 17.88% annualized. Noticing the trend? Elmont is ahead of the average resale value increases and the supply and demand shortages. For many months now, the quantity of resale homes on MLS in Elmont continues to be in single digits, with many only a few days on market, and many times attracting multiple offers, a trend until recently only experienced in larger centers. We have a cross issue of those who can no longer afford to buy or rent a home being caused by a shortage in the marketplace. Hence, the market demand to build more and more diverse product that they are searching for. For the aforementioned and for many other two time-consuming reasons to bring to you tonight, I fully support the direction of the developer in this project and welcome any questions you may have.
Thank you for your comments, Paul. Susan Cannon, did you have further comments? Are you here? Absolutely. So I need you to be in front of the microphone, or we can bring one to you if you'd like.
No, I'll get one.
You're okay?
I'll move on. It's good for me to move.
It's a lot of sitting at tonight's meeting. So just watch in front of you. There's some electricity boxes there. I don't want you to trip on.
All right. I didn't think that I would speak today. I'm always very interested, but I have a standing conflict for Tuesday evenings, so I don't get to meetings, and that's too bad for me. Anyways, there were just a couple of comments further to this. Was I had read in the big, long attachment that came online that behind this apartment building, now maybe I'm wrong, I guess I should say who I am. I'm Sue Cannon. I live on Van Dusen Street. I was on the Ottawa's Advisory Committee for Agriculture and Rural Affairs for 7 years, liaising with the Poverty Issues Committee and with the Forestry, Green Space, and Environmental Committee. I have volunteered with what was CareBridge years ago for many, many years, and in the community. So we used to live 8 kilometers in West Carleton before a driver whacked me and disabled me, and so now I'm in Elmont. So anyways, I am very interested, but we've known Elmont always, even though I lived 8 kilometers away before in West Carleton. So behind this building, it says there's going to be dense vegetative plantings made, and I'm trying to visualize how 6 meters of space behind a building is going to allow dense vegetative planting, and they said a fence. Now, that was just one comment. Regarding the underground parking, has there been any kind of hydrology tests or any kind of investigating as to what blasting and digging into that bedrock there is going to do to the area or to our water collections or just the environmental impacts of, I mean, underground parking is definitely safer, and this building is intended more for the senior citizens because the people that are running the open house say it is high end and it's going to be for the wealthy, more for the wealthy people, which tend to be older. So it is a benefit. But has there been any investigation into whether that is a sound environmental thing to do? Because I didn't get to earlier meetings, I have to say, and this is possibly only a personal opinion, that I would have preferred the initial location for this apartment building, because if you look down on the subdivision now, it is not visually pleasing at all. What you see is long rows of rooftops and townhouse units that look like an army barracks to me, if you're up in that park between where I am in Van Dusen, where the Neelcor homes are. So I think it's unfortunate. If it had been an apartment building, visually overall looking to the river, I believe it would have been more attractive, but that's too late now. I think it would have been good to have had more apartments that weren't high-end built, because my son does, who has a disability, is one in one of the few CareBridge apartments that are geared to income, and I know there aren't very many out there. So I think that that's a shame that there wasn't some kind of in a building this large and this financially rewarding, that there wasn't more set aside for those who are less advantageous.
Thank you for your comments. And just watch those electricity boxes there. Anne LeBlanc.
Thank you very much for allowing me to make a few comments. I must say I'm new to Almont. I've only lived here 2 years. Absolutely love it. So get that right off the top. I just have a few concerns. I do live in Riverfront Estates, and there are, seeing a potential apartment building going up, there are runoff and water issues now, flooded basements now. I don't know what type of impact that's going to have on an apartment building with underground parking. That should be something that both the builder and developer are aware of, as well as the township, that there may have to be special, you know, arrangements made for that type of thing, because it's definitely an issue. One of the reasons we moved to Almont was to get away from street parking. Now, you're putting up a residential building with 44 units. I understand there's going to be plenty of parking in the lower level. However, visitor parking is limited, and there's always a problem with visitor parking. I know we can't stop building apartment buildings, but there needs to be an awareness there of potential traffic issues with people parking on the side streets. There is a nice park on Spring Street as well, so more people in the area, it's going to bring more people to the park. There is no public parking lot on the Spring Street side for that particular park. There is up at the top of Merrithew, but in the Spring Street park, there is no parking lot there. That may be something that may have to be done to accommodate a 44-unit apartment building. And the other thing I want to bring up is, could this building set a precedent for future development? Now, I understand the same developer owns the farmland to the, is it the south of it or the east, whichever is going to be behind the building. They own the land and it's being rented out for agricultural. And I understand it's in a different ward. However, what's to prevent the next so-called phase from being, you know, 15, 20 apartment buildings? I know that's reaching way out there, but that's a possibility. And because it's going to be in a different ward, then I would think that maybe it wouldn't follow under our jurisdiction as to what actually goes in that area. So I'm wondering if this may set a precedent. So you've got one apartment going up. The next block of land is the same developer, but a different ward, so it may not, it may not have the same boundaries that, say, Mississippi Mills has. I'm not sure.
So that's still part of Mississippi Mills? It's just a rural
ward of Mississippi Mills? Oh, it's just a rural ward. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Ramsey's a rural ward of Mississippi Mills.
Okay, so yeah. That would be another, just a few comments I wanted to make. Nothing, yeah, that's it.
That's it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Scott Newton. Welcome, Scott.
Hello. So I'm up on Johanna Street in Riverfront as well. And my question, I guess it's more of a question than a comment, is about traffic studies. I've got three kids that go to Holy Name of Mary. There's three elementary schools in Almont. Two of them are on Patterson Street. The only way to get out of this of Riverfront Estates is either Spring Street or Patterson Street. Spring Street's a family subdivision, a residential area with a hospital. Patterson Street, it's got the retirement home and then two elementary schools. Very narrow street, and the traffic up there is horrendous already. I've been involved in meetings with this Spring Street. It was originally the Spring Street subdivision, Spring Street Extension subdivision, way back in 2008. And it seems every phase that gets approved, there's amendments to increase the density. So every single phase, the density increases, more homes packed in. So the original traffic studies, I know there's a traffic study done for this, but I'm wondering if the traffic studies are cumulative, or do they just look at sort of this phase, we're adding an extra 12 units. So that's not really going to impact. But the overall subdivision with every phase adding, you know, adding to the density and adding more and more units, has that been looked at as a whole? And just because, as I say, the traffic already is quite bad on Patterson Street. I appreciate council with the crossing guard. That's a peace of mind for some families. But just having kids walking along that sidewalk during the mornings, it's just it's bad already. So just a question on that.
Excellent. That'll be reflected in the report that comes back. Yeah. All the comments and questions will be reflected there.
Thank you.
Thank you. Was there anyone who hasn't spoken yet who had a comment they would like to make this evening? And reminder, you can also submit comments in writing as well. Okay, seeing not, that concludes the public meeting this evening. We have already done the Committee of the Whole report and our bylaws, so that brings to announcements and invitations. Is there anyone at the table with an announcement or invitation? Councillor Maiden.
Just a reminder, Councillor Dalgetty and I will be at the Mississippi Mills Library on the first Saturday of every month, and I think the next one is February 1st.
Okay. Any other announcements or invitations? Seeing not, I'm looking for mover and seconder for the confirmatory bylaw. Confirms the proceedings. Councillor Ferguson, Councillor Dalgetty, all those in favor? Thank you. Mover and seconder for adjournment. Councillor Dalgetty, Councillor Holmes, all those in favor? Thank you. We're adjourned. And I believe the chair of the Committee of the Whole wants to take a few minutes before calling that meeting to order.